Hey, 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 I'm Dennis Poulette. Welcome to my podcast where we talk about how to help the next generation succeed. I'm really on a mission to help parents lead and launch their kids. And today we are joined by Kristen Ivey. She's an author, a speaker, and a director of a little project called The Phase Project. Now I'm gonna let her introduce herself in the interview, but I wanted to remind you that in the notes below, you're gonna find all the links to all the resources that we talk about, so make sure you check those out. Without further delay, let's get into the interview right now. So, hey, I'm here with Kristen Ivey, and today we are just going to be talking a little bit about how to be better parents and how to work with our kids in different phases. And so, Kristen, I would love it if you would introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do, and that'll give us a chance to kind of have the opportunity to get to know you a little better.
Well, Dennis, thank you for letting me be a part of this conversation. This is very fun. So I am the mother of three kids. My kids are right now 11, 9, and 5. And I was a high school teacher early on in my career. And while I was a high school teacher, I've been a volunteer in youth ministry ever since I left youth ministry as a high schooler. There's something just about that particular age that I love being around teenagers, middle school, high school. It's just fun. It brings a lot of life to my life. And after I left teaching high school, I got my Master's of Divinity and joined up with an organization called Orange. And we exist as a nonprofit to support ministry leaders and churches really around the world. I've been a part of Orange for the last 15 years, and now I'm on the executive team here. And just there's nothing else I would rather do than work with leaders who are influencing the church and helping families like mine, families not like mine, all kinds of families just grow in faith and character and really invest in the future of the next generation.
So Orange is, can you explain what Orange is? You just kind of did, but like there's a couple of other things in there that maybe would be helpful too. What does Orange actually do?
So for me personally, the Orange conversation, I all of a sudden, when you asked that question, I went back to an IHOP where we were sitting one day when we were trying to come up with what would we call this thing that we do, this organization. And we came to the color orange because it represented what we were really fundamentally about, which was we believe that there are two primary influences in the next generation, and one of those is the church, and we use yellow to represent the light of the church to reach the next generation. And the other, you know, primary entity is the family, and we use red to represent the heart of the family. And we just love to say all the time, if the heart of the family, the warmth of the home, can connect with the light of the church, we stand a better opportunity of really impacting the next generation to go deeper in their faith, to have a more authentic faith, and in a way that will shape the future. So at its kind of, you know, bottom line, Orange is about partnering churches and families together to reach the next generation. We are a nonprofit, so we do that in many different ways. Part of that is through curriculum and resources, books, publications, training, online events, a number of ways, but everything that we do is primarily focused around that one mission.
Yeah, and out of Orange is this thing called the Phase Project, right? Is that part of Orange? Is that something different? Because that's really what we're going to talk about today a lot, is the Phase Project. So tell me a little bit about it, like what is it? And if somebody's never heard of it, you know, like just give me the 30-second high-level overview. See, it feels like it's not just a little project, but like it was a ginormous project that kind of has been beneficial. So give me a little bit of the scoop on that.
Yeah, so Dennis, it was like a little project, and it kept growing and growing, at least from my intent. You know, and I think a lot of those of us who are working in this area, youth ministers, you know, like yourself, family ministers, those of us who are kind of working with kids and teenagers, we tend to be passionate about the age group that we work with. And, you know, I have this also from my education background. I remember as a high school teacher, you know, I love being in a classroom with sophomores. Like, that's not normal for every adult. I've learned that over time. But there's just something about that particular stage of life that is kind of energizing to me. So I could tell you all day long why that's the very best phase in a person's life. Why it's just
I have a sophomore,
to be an
so
adult who gets.
I'm looking forward to this. Tell me more.
So I think that there are adults who are wired to connect with kids at different phases. And so it led us on this exploration. And Phase Project really was this this project of reading everything that we could find on human development, from, you know, physiology to psychology to emotional development, moral development, everything that we could read about really what it looks like to grow up as a human, you know, over time. What have we studied and learned? And then kind of put that in conversation with theological formation, spiritual formation, and how do those two things come together? And a few emphases of the Phase Project. One was that if you go back to the roots of a lot of human development, some of it kind of came out of a line of thinking that is, it is helpful, but I would call it a little bit deterministic. If these certain things didn't happen in a person's life, here's kind of basically the fallout that you can expect. And so when you read a lot of literature, you kind of, if you're like me, there's a sense of panic as a parent, because I'm like, oh, shoot, you know, I've already messed it up. Like, this is already over for me. And that doesn't tend to inspire me as a mom to really try again. It just like weighs shame upon shame upon fear upon shame. And it sort of shuts us down.
Yeah, one shot and you're done, right? Like, yeah.
I mean,
I'm glad that's not really true, because I've messed up plenty of times.
Right. I mean, we live perpetually aware of the ways that we're already messing our kids up. And then you read something else and you're like, well, great. Just add that to the list. And so what we wanted to do is really focus on the opportunities that every phase provides, because there are unique opportunities at every phase for each of us as adults, if we pay attention, to get something right. And I think for me, I know that it's more inspiring, and, you know, I'll own it. Sure, it's a little bit like optimistic, but it's more inspiring to focus on what I'm doing right, to remember to keep doing those things and to stay tuned into those opportunities at every phase, and to just heavily focus and prioritize my energy on what really matters in this phase, and to keep trying. And so that's what Phase Project essentially was, is how do we isolate the unique opportunities that will help move a kid toward a better future at each phase? And we wanted to put language around those things, and help leaders and parents and educators and everybody begin to understand, you know, what really matters most, so that we cannot miss those opportunities.
Okay, so let's get super practical then. Like, let's talk, especially I'm interested in, I have a daughter going into fifth grade. I've got a, man, I'm bad at this. I got a seventh grader, and I've got, well, going into seventh and then going into 10th. So I'm really interested in those three phases specifically. And I'm thinking that most of the people that listen to this are probably thinking about, I have someone going into sixth grade, like middle school or throughout high school. And then maybe there might be a few people who are into that phase of my son or daughter just graduated from high school and now what? And so can you give me some kind of like a 30,000 foot overview, obviously, of kind of those three specific phases? Because in the Phase Project, how many phases are there? There's like 18. It's like some kind of crazy large number. And you know more than I do. I'm just trying to help us out a little bit. But I'm really interested in those areas right there. But give me some of that stuff.
Well, you've got some really important ages, goodness. You said fifth grade, seventh grade, and 10th grade. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, no pressure on you. Those are big years.
Yeah.
I think that one of the things that I notice in child development and human development studies is there's a lot of energy on the beginning of a kid's life, the new baby phases. You know, all of us remember in that season of life, there's something changing every few months. And so we become a little bit like fixated on like, okay, are they crawling yet? Are they sitting up yet?
More aware of whether you've messed up too, right? Like, oh, they're not crawling. Yeah. So I've done something wrong. Or yeah.
It's every few months, right? Something's changing every few months. And so really, I guess these studies are still relatively new. And a lot of times what happens is adolescence gets lumped into one category as if like humanity reaches the age of 12 and then it's like, pretty much the same till 25, you know?
Right.
And we know that that's true. That's not the case. As a high school teacher, you know, I just got a front row seat to everything that changes from a ninth grader to a 10th grader. And oh my goodness. I mean, those classrooms are fundamentally different environments. If you have ninth graders in a classroom all day long, every day for a year, and then you see those people, you know, in it's everything's different in 10th grade.
Yeah, one of my small group leaders in my church, she's with the seventh graders right now, and one of the seventh graders was like, "I'm really interested in helping the incoming sixth graders." Because it's so different, this middle school. So the difference that even the seventh grader understood between where she is now, where she just finished sixth grade, and the ones who are coming into sixth grade, she was even the you know 12-year-old girl was like, there's a huge difference. So I didn't mean to cut you off. Keep going with your thoughts. Sorry.
No, she's wrong. She's not wrong, and that's what I think we lose sight of as adults. I know I do this all the time. I just forget. My adult world moves so, like, I'm in this, I think our adult pace is different than our kids. And I so often make the mistake of looking up and assuming that my 11-year-old son is essentially the same person that he was when he was really 9. I mean, forget 10. Like, I go back 2 years. I just think he's kind of should be the same person. And I'm like, I know you. I get you. And really, I've missed what is changing about him and the shifts that he's making. And that's what I think matters so much. I'll go straight to, you mentioned sixth grade, like somewhere in the 11-year-old range. There is just so much that could be said about this phase. We gathered educators, teachers who'd taught this grade for a very long time, taught sixth grade specifically, counselors, pediatricians who work with this age in particular. And it's such an interesting place to be because you still have a kid in your home who's a kid, and yet they know that they're moving into adolescence, I think, a lot more than we tend to recognize it as parents. A lot of the puberty changes are internal at first, so you don't see them. Those hormones, I mean, man, they are changing on the inside, and it's not necessarily physically obvious yet, unless, you know, you tend to see maybe a little bit more emotional outbursts. Maybe it's anger, maybe it's tears, maybe it's anxieties, but their emotions tend to be really heightened. And along with that, there's an abundance of self-awareness. There's something in the brain that actually begins to change somewhere around the age of 10 and 11, where a kid begins for the first time to really self-reflect in a different way. And so they become overly self-conscious in those phases. And oftentimes I run the risk of the thing that helps me relate to a sophomore is I just have the spiritual gift of sarcasm. Like it just comes natural. But in the 11-year-old phase, it can be really dangerous. This is where you can do damage to a kid's self-esteem and really wound them without intention, and need to apologize and go back and go, I'm so sorry, because they are extremely self-conscious in this phase. You tend to, when we're not in a global pandemic, see this age group really traveling in big group, like big groups. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody goes to the bathroom together. Everybody goes to the mall together. Tend to congregate in mass. One of my favorite things that I noted about this age is it mattered so much who else was coming to anything. Youth event, you name it. It was never about what they wanted to do. It was always about who else was going to be there. And I think some of those things are important for us to remember, that it's not necessarily to be scoffed at or ridiculed or trained out of our kids, but some of those things are a natural progression of how they're forming identity, how they're beginning to understand themselves, and that we really do have to have a very, nurturing approach, even in the middle of a lot of anxieties in those early middle school type phases. So paying attention to their friends is important, which I think is scary as a parent, if I'm really honest right now in the time that we're in, because my kids are kind of in that zone as well. And it's harder than ever for them to have those human connections. But if I were speaking to a fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade parent in this phase right now, it would be to pay attention to the way that they can still have human connection, whatever that looks like. That their ability to navigate friendships right now is very significant to their formation of identity. And whether that means Skype or, you know, FaceTime online, Facebook Messenger kids, or whatever it is that you feel comfortable with, you know, who you are. But really leaning into that, I think, matters a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things that my kids are always on some kind of device talking to their friends. So I'm thinking about specifically like the going into fifth grader and the going into seventh grader. So right there in that sweet spot that you're kind of talking about, like if I took away all their communication devices, they would be lost right now as far as like what to do. Like it's not even because they want to be on electronics as much as they just want to be talking. Like just a few minutes ago, I was like, hey, where'd my daughter go? And she was upstairs talking to her cousin on FaceTime, like on her iPad, right? So like she had been down with us, and like 10 seconds later, as soon as she disappeared, I knew she was connected already with her cousin who lives in Florida. So it's like, this is like that whole, like, who am I with? And all of that is a valid kind of a point. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we have to, it's fundamentally shifted the game around technology. I know in my own house, as soon as everything hit, we basically lifted these restrictions on the devices in a different way, far beyond what I was comfortable with. And it's just trying to go day to day to navigate. Okay. I mean, online games, you know, are a way of connecting. And I think more than ever before, we just need to be tuned in as parents or as adult mentors to say, you know, how can you help encourage those heart connections or human connections that your kids are making, even when they are through a device, even if it's on an online game system? How can you help ask questions of your kids so that they're thinking about how their friend is doing emotionally, how their friend is handling life, what makes them laugh together with their friend, and asking some questions to just promote human connection, even when we're really struggling, I think, even as a culture and society, to figure out what that looks like for us right now.
Yeah. Yeah. None of us really feel the connection that we used to at this point. Right. Like it's even just the way I was thinking about this whole thing, and I was like, yeah, I'm so glad you're coming into the studio today. Like there is no studio. This is my basement. And you know, it's like, this is cool, but it's not the same kind of connection as like it would be sitting down face to face kind of a thing, at least not for us, maybe for our kids.
Yeah.
Like I've got this theory that for my kids and for kids in our youth group and all that kind of stuff, they don't really see the screen the same way that we do. So I'm trying to process through that and figure out what I actually believe about that. But it's definitely a little bit different. So tell me about high schoolers then, like 9th, 10th grade. What are things that the phases kind of teach us about that specific development stage?
Right. Well, if we were to back up through the phase project, and I won't do this because I know we need to stay focused. One thing that we did is we identified for every age a primary question. And that came through a lot of, like I said, developmental theorists and conversations and research that we did. But we identified the key question, and that was just a way of specifically focusing a parent or a leader around the one issue that matters most for that particular age. Now, in the seventh grade, if you think about middle school as a whole, where we just were speaking, it's a lot actually about identity formation. There's a lot required, I think, on us of affirming the kid's personal worth in that phase, because there is so much insecurity as everything feels like it's kind of jumbled up and confused, heightened emotions, a lot of potential for change, oftentimes changing friendships and just, you know, trying to regroup around this idea of who am I. When you get into high school, the questions were heavily influenced by the phase of school, which is changing right now. So I'll just lay it out there and go, it's going to be interesting to watch how teenagers are going through the fall, this fall, and specifically in relation to these. But for ninth grade, we say that that question is, where do I belong? A lot of ninth graders are changing where they go to school. They're in a new environment. Oftentimes, it's an environment with more kids than were in their middle school. So, you know, it's a bigger environment. And so we really would encourage parents to focus primarily on the friendships that their ninth grader is forming. And not to, it is different and unique at the ninth grade phase, because oftentimes, you know, a teenager will gravitate to where they find the most acceptance. And oftentimes, as youth ministry leaders, I watch sometimes we talk about healthy friendships, right? Get into healthy friendships, be around friends that promote wise choices. The majority of ninth graders, they hear that and they care, but they can't care about it more than just acceptance. And I think for us to recognize it as adults, that the fundamental need to be accepted, to belong somewhere, to feel as if you're welcome and free and invited just for who you are, is a primary fundamental human need, especially for a ninth grader. And so as they work to resolve that, one of the things we can't discount is just the importance of them feeling that human connection and belonging with somebody.
Yeah, so is that where, is that where the whole, like, you know, some, I mean, people talk about social media and how social media has, like in ninth and 10th grade specifically, like, people will see, hey, all my friends were invited to this party and I wasn't there. So, like, they're on social media seeing that they weren't accepted because they weren't invited to that party, and they see all their friends posting about it. And so that's what makes it even, like, 100 times more difficult than just, like, if I'm not invited to a party, I just wasn't invited. But by now, I'm old enough to kind of be like, well, I didn't want to go anyway because I just wanted to watch Netflix. But like, in ninth grade, it's that whole, like, hey, I'm missing out. So would you say fear of missing out would be kind of amplified in the ninth and 10th grade kind of phase? I think that's what
especially
I'm hearing.
Especially in ninth.
Ninth grade, okay.
Yeah, especially in ninth grade. And I think that's a great analogy, because I think the thing that we forget is part of our human identity is connected to, am I acceptable? Am I welcome? Am I going to be? And I think for ninth grade, they're still sitting in a formation place of going, am I going to be an acceptable adult? You know, as I transition out of childhood, as I become this new person, is the person I'm becoming welcome? Is the person that I'm becoming acceptable? Is the person that I'm becoming somebody who will be welcomed in? And so we can't underestimate that value. And I would lean into parents in this phase all the time and just say, it doesn't matter that your kid has a million followers on a social media platform, or that they're, because that can be lonely as well. But really, don't be afraid to lean in and poke around and figure out, are they connected to somebody who really welcomes them, values them? Do they have one or two really solid foundational friendships? And if not, maybe it's time to reevaluate and put them in some new environments or some new places where they can make new connections or explore a different activity, a different hobby, a different interest, a different online game. I mean, get as creative as you need to, but just don't underestimate the importance of belonging in that ninth grade phase. As you move to sophomore year, there's an interesting thing that kind of shifts. A lot of kids do begin to find themselves maybe in a new friendship circle, a new group of people. Maybe they've landed somewhere and started to make some of those new connections. And so one of the things is you just get this surge of independence. I kind of like to think of sophomores as like three-year-olds, but with potentially a driving license. So it's like, there's just this headlong rush into, I have arrived and I'm smarter than my parents. I'm smarter than my teachers. I now know everything there is to know about the world and I'm ready to go. And that, you know, progresses maybe throughout the year in the sophomore year, but there's just a lot of exciting striving toward independence and new and fresh. And one of the things that I find exciting about 10th grade is the optimism, the true belief that they can change the world, that they've arrived and the world should take notice now, and they're going to fix it all.
So is there something that, yeah, that we can do to kind of like speak into that or encourage, or, cause I don't feel that that's a bad thing. And I don't, that's not what you're saying, but like, so what can we do like as parents and adults, who are looking at 10th graders who are like, hey, I've got all this optimism, I know all these things, I'm independent, I'm going to change things. How do we kind of like, do we push that? Some of them, I guess we got to hold back a little bit, but like, what is some advice for that kind of phase?
Well, I love being around sophomores and I never want a parent one, so I'll just put it that way. I think it does come with a lot of fear because there are some reckless decisions that are made in this phase of life. We've probably, a lot of us have read about cognitive formation and how if you look into what's happening in the brain, there's not a lot of ability to do long-term thinking and planning, and so that
I'm going to change the world right now.
Yeah, think adrenaline rush.
With what I did right this second. Yeah.
Right. So there's definitely some parental fear that comes with that, but it is an opportunity to practice, freaking out on the inside, not on the outside. I have bad face management, but you got to like do some face management, really listen, asking questions as if you're fascinated, as if their ideas are the very first time you've ever heard whatever it is they're processing. I think resisting the urge to freak out. Don't ever assume that what a sophomore in high school has decided that they believe is what they will decide they've believed forever. Mm. They need the opportunity to explore. They need the opportunity to hear themselves process out loud. They need to be... they need to feel, I think, a level of respect from us as they're processing and going, I'm pretty sure about this and I'm pretty sure about that, and throw some things on the wall and see if it sticks. And I think just creating some space for that independent striving that comes with sophomore year is important. As you move toward junior year, I would say that drive tends to become a little more rooted. When you talk to educators, there's this thing that we heard over and over and over again, which was, a hard one to mention, but teen suicide is something I think that we are all watching and very aware of, and we should be as both parents, as leaders, as mentors, educators, everybody. Teen suicide peaks in the 10th grade. And a lot of that results from kids who don't end up finding a foundation of acceptance. Mm. And that's not to diagnose it for every time that something happens, it's impossible to recognize. And so for so many of us, I want to go, you can't always see those things coming. But a lot of it has to do with the unresolved questions of a 9th and 10th grader. But a lot of educators will say, as a kid gets into the 11th grade, there's a little bit of this sense of relief that all of a sudden there's been an angst that kicked in somewhere around 11, 10, 11. And that angst just is on this increase, pressure cooker, rise up to 10th grade. And somewhere, if you get through the 10th grade, it tends to like fall off. And that, I think there's a settling into the junior year where... kids are wrestling in a different level with what it looks like to make a difference in the world and becoming maybe more connected to making it happen. I think 11th graders are looking for ways that they can tangibly influence the world around them right now. So that might even look like, as a parent, that you help them start a blog, that you help them kick off a music career on YouTube, that you help them figure out how they can do a Kickstarter for a campaign, whatever it is that they are going to start to like lean into those talents that they have and begin to practice them in the world. that those things are really essential in the 11th grade year.
Because by then they've kind of already had that discovery phase of I now know where I fit in. I know what I'm acceptable at. I kind of know what I'm good at even. Yeah, I can see that happening in you know, youth group kids. I don't have an 11th grader yet, but I could see that happening in some of them that are that age where they're kind of, they kind of know now, hey, this is me and this is what mm-hmm. I can offer. And so as a parent, it would be a good idea to kind of like help them train up the child in a way that they are bent to doing things, right? Like help them understand how God has created them and help them kind of almost launch them into the next area of their life. That's kind of what it yeah. sounds like you're saying, right?
Yeah. And none of this is true for every kid. Like I have three kids. They are so far from each other in terms of the way that they live this out. Each kid has so much uniqueness to them. And I think that's what's important about parents and caregivers and those who have, you know, weekly, daily connection with a kid is, you know, your kid, and your kid may be so different from what we're describing. What we were trying to lean into with FACE Project is mostly just some of the general trends of age groups. I think because both things are true, and one is that I know my kid in a way as a parent that nobody else knows them, and the other piece is I frequently miss the things that are true about the phase that they're in. Because I'm still thinking, you know, I know my kid 2 years ago, 3 years ago, the day they were born, and I frequently miss how they're changing and what's changing around them in their peer groups and in their community. And so I'm thinking as I listen to us even dialogue about this, you know, there's always those two sides that we have to hold in tension of.
Yeah, and that's
sort of what's ready and what's definitely unique to each kid.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I find beneficial about the guides even is that you take the basic principles and then basically ask specific questions that'll be like, hey, think about your kid and answer mm-hmm. these questions based on your relationship with your child and the way that they're kind of going through these phases. But like you're not giving, there is no roadmap to parenthood. There's no specific like do this, and then your kid will come out perfect and everything will be great and everybody will be happy. So that's kind of where I think like even what you were saying about giving ourselves grace as parents is an important thing, because it's not like, oh, if I would have just studied harder, I could have been a better parent and I could have made sure that my kid never did this or didn't do that or he turned out this way. And failure is okay. We're supposed to learn from it. So those, all of that thrown in, it's not really a science, but there are scientific things that we can look at in order to make our parenting better, if that makes sense. It's kind of what I'm hearing absolutely. From you about that.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. When I think of high school, I don't know if this analogy makes any sense. This may be horrible. I sometimes invent bad analogies. But if I were thinking in terms of dating, and I know with digital and online, there's also all kinds of trends we could get into about how that in and of itself is changing and fewer teenagers dating, and there's a whole conversation there. But if I were drawing a dating analogy, it would be as if your ninth grader is on a dating platform seeing if everybody will swipe past or if somebody's going to click their photo and just waiting if they're going to be accepted or if anybody will find, you know, them interesting. By 10th grade, I think a lot of them are like, well, how many dates can I go on with as many people as possible and just see, like, this is my time for discovery and exploration. Think of junior year as the time when they get into something serious. And somewhere by the end of junior year, going into senior year, they've decided like they've met the one and they're getting married. You know, I mean, it all progresses really fast, but that would be like, if you were to take that around identity formation or character formation, those kind of feelings, I think, accompany those age groups. And then somewhere in the senior year, don't tell them this, but at some point they end up like breaking up, right? With the one. Now it may be like, middle of senior year, they're ahead of the curve, or it may be like halfway through the year following, I don't know. And I think something about that is there is a fundamental crisis that happens for a lot of seniors as they have been caught up in figuring out who they are and where they belong and what their purpose in life is. But it's all been done within this kind of safe and protected world of knowing what the next step is for them. The next step is to progress to the next grade. The next step is to, you know, can, if they made band, then they get promoted to the next, you know, group of band, whatever it is. There's a lot of steps that are outlined and already thought through. And the crisis of senior year, at whatever point that your kid discovers it and begins to realize it and feel it, and it is something that's truly just felt, is the crisis of not knowing what's next for them. And all of a sudden, there's a sense in which, like, the world kind of melts, I mean, around them, and they begin to go, wait a minute, I actually don't know what the next step looks like here. And one of the things that I've really loved to follow a number of leaders, Kara Powell out of Fuller Youth Institute, they did a book called Growing With this last year. Jim Burns released a new book on parenting your emerging adult, parenting adult children, I think is what it's called. And helping walk our kids through that. There's a season of loneliness and I think a season of loss and grief that comes kind of post senior year, post graduation. And it's easy for us to miss it because we're caught up in the celebration of, hey, you finished high school. Hey, you accomplished some great thing. And oftentimes as adults, if we're not careful, we can miss the grief and the anxiety and the loneliness that begins to set in that kind of emerging adult, early 20s type 19-20 phase of a young person's life.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that. I mean, even in my life, like way back, you know, I mean, I can only speak to my own experience, but like that's, yeah, I mean, I could totally see like you hit college and you're supposed to know exactly what you're studying. And even now it's mm-hmm. like, even before that, like even in high school, you're taking all of these college prep classes to kind of like, so that whenever you get out, you're 2 years into college already. And then like, boom, now you have to know exactly what you're studying and what you're going to be for the rest of your life. And that would freak me out. And I'm a lot older than a freshman in college. And so like, just trying to figure out those, like, it's okay. Take a breath. Like we can grieve what you're losing. Right. But there is a lot that you're gaining after graduation and all of that. But let's take a minute to kind of just look around and see what's going on before we totally freak out and have to make a choice that takes us down to like being an accountant for the rest of our lives whenever we don't want to do that. Like that, I joke because that's what I went to college to study. And freshman year, I was like, I am horrible at this. Like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. So if there are accountants listening, it's okay. You could do that. But like, that wasn't for me. That wasn't the way that God had designed me. That wasn't what I was supposed to do. But I felt like I had to have it figured out. So declare your major. And as soon as you do that, then you're down that road. And then, oh, if you're going to change now, you've missed the boat. Like, you're in a lot of trouble. So
I think inadvertently, yeah, as a culture, we put a lot of pressure on 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds to know what they want to do for the rest of their life. And such a low percent have any clue what they want to do for the rest of their life. I mean, I still don't know what I want to do for the rest of my life. That's a long statement, right? So I think one of the things that we can do in that phase of a person's life is narrow their options, begin to say, help them narrow the field, because you know, somebody who has too many options in front of them oftentimes just can't make any choice. It's just, it's too much.
Yeah.
And so just beginning to say, how about this or this, both are good. Let's weigh some pros and cons. What do you know is true about you right now? What feels like the right step right now? When we can focus on the next right step for our seniors rather than the huge long road way out in front of them, the rest of your life conversations, we can help take off some of that pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, those are good thoughts for sure. We could probably talk all day. I know you don't have all day to talk. I do appreciate it. So if somebody wants to know more, how do we find out more about phases? Where do we go? What do we do? or even about Kristen, Ivy, and what you're up to, where do we go?
Well, I'm on social media, mostly on Instagram at just Kristen Ivy. That's an E-N and an I-V-Y, but so you can find me there. I love to talk about anything parenting, anything faith and human formation. And I am also part of the team at Orange and Parent Q. And if you want to follow along with Parent Q, that's just theparentq.com. We print articles from a lot of leaders that I love learning from over there. You can follow them on social media, follow the blog. There's a number of resources coming out through Parent Q. You'll find out more about phases, and that's kind of where I like to create.
The Parent Q, Phase Project, and Orange. If you look those up, we'll find you, right? That's kind of how That's kind of how we do it around here. That's awesome. Well, thanks so much for being with us and for just having this cool conversation. Hopefully it'll help a lot of people. So I appreciate it.
Well, Dennis, thank you for what you do and for everything that you are doing to support parents of teenagers. I know as a parent that I need a lot of support, especially as my kids get older. So I'm just really grateful to leaders like you to come alongside of us and keep us sane and remind us to keep going, and it won't be like this forever. But what we do right now can make a difference in our kids' life, even when it feels like it doesn't.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast, watching the video, however you're consuming it. Since you made it all the way to the end, I would love to hear what stood out the most to you today. So be sure that you leave me a comment or you send me a tweet to @drpoulette. I would love to hear from you, and I want to thank you so much for listening or watching or whatever you're doing right now, and we will see you in the next episode.